Hello and welcome back to Serie A Spotlight. We're your hosts, Jay
and Matt.
You know what time it is!
I can't tell you guys enough how much you've been my internal monologue when thinking about football for the last year.
Yes, amazing!
We get to record while drinking some wine.
Jake and I will have a very special soft spot for Salerno.
Yeah, we love him.
Stop zooming in on Allegri's face, boy. You're gonna make
How
me
are you
break.
Exposing me?
Because you're gonna make me break.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Serie A Spotlight. This is episode 166 and we're your host Jake
and Matt,
joined today by a very special guest and an old friend of ours, Lou Grima.
Pleasure to be here, guys.
Thank you very much for coming on, bro.
So Grima's an Inter fan. Can we ask you why you're an Inter fan?
Genuinely, I was thinking about this when you were like, told me to prepare some things and just like thinking about it. And off the top of my head, I was really trying to figure out when the first time I started deciding it Inter was. And I've been asked this before. I don't have a reason, frankly. I can't say it's from my family.
But it's been, I remember, since we're kids.
I think I've always supported Inter. My family side with Lazio, for those who don't know. So it's not like a family thing, you know, my father brought me into the sport. No, I think my father actively tried to get me to side with Lazio, did not manage. Potentially it could be because I really liked the colors when I was a kid and they just stuck by. I remember seeing, you know, Materazzi, Ronaldo, back when we were starting. I think the most I got into them when I actually properly started understanding a bit more and supporting was in the first Mancini era, when they swapped from Lazio. I was really, really trying to go through it. I think one event I remember was potentially my father being like, Lazio are playing Inter this week, and when there was the Super Cup in the, I forgot it was the UEFA Cup or something like that, when Inter beat Lazio. I was like, who won? Potentially told me Inter beat them. I said, okay, so Inter are better than Lazio. So I was like a little 5-year-old kid. I was like, you know, I should side with them.
That's when the decision was made. Fair enough. Like, go with the winning team. You had your years of suffering as well.
Yes, of course. We'll get into all of that. Before we do get into anything, I just want to give a special shout out to our media partners. Benevobid, you're seeing some signed kits over there. Look at that, bro. Inzaghi signed kit, Totti signed kit, and plenty more on their website. That Roma kit, I say this every episode, it's one of the nicest kits I've ever seen. And the fact that it's signed by Totti is absolutely mental, and here it is sitting in our studio when one of you guys could have it. So go check out Benevobid, go check them out on their socials, go check out their website. Most of the proceeds go to Putino Cares, because if one person cares, it's Putino. Putino always cares.
Yes. And I love how we have the better Inzaghi over there behind us 100%, for this episode.
100%. Hit the link in our description if you guys want to check it out. And if you guys are new here, make sure to follow us on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, and YouTube. Rate us 5 stars on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. With weekly episodes covering each match day and weekly bonus tactical analysis episodes called Tactics Imperium by John Leah. And we also have a blog on our website if you prefer visual aid to your tactics. But we're here to talk about Inter today.
Yes. However, if you really like us and want to support us, we also have our Patreon.
Yes.
You can subscribe. It's $3.99 a month. All the money that is given to us is reinvested into the podcast itself, so you will help to improve potentially one of your favorite shows.
Guys, this microphone is weird at the moment.
Yes, it's playing.
It's really, really weird. So
we need
money. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And if you guys, your parents have some business or something, sponsor us a bit, man. It'll be fun. We'll have a laugh.
Speaking of patrons, Grima's a patron.
One of our first patrons.
He became a patron when we were in Crete.
Last year. We're just like, it's become a patron. I remember. Steve and I, had signed up.
There's only one person here that isn't a patron. Jake.
Me.
I'm a patron.
He became a patron through our Serie A Spotlight account.
Did I?
Yes, yeah, no, so we're both patrons.
But with my credit card.
Which I have the details.
But surely, like, they take a cut, no? So you might as well just take the money. Or you just want to inflate the numbers?
At the end of the day, $3.99 a month, I'm not really going to, not that I'm making bank, but I'm not going to feel them. So they're not going to affect me. It's like
He wants to inflate the numbers. So that's like when you're like, okay, who should I be a patron of? And you're
Sponsor, potential sponsors might be listening. Don't say that.
So we don't tell them about the 300 Bangladeshi people that
In fact, I'm going to jump onto the next topic real quick over here because we love our Bangladeshi friends. Before we get into Inter, there was some big news concerning an Inter legend in Thiago Motta, who we're a bit late on this, but he has lost his job as the Juventus manager. Had a great season at Bologna. He was doing well at Spezia before as well. Made the big jump to Juve. It seemed like he had the full support of Giuntoli up until a couple of weeks ago. Giuntoli was saying, this guy's here to stay even if we don't make Champions League. Fast forward a week later, he's yelling in his face saying, I'm ashamed I ever even hired you. So it seems to be like, obviously, Motta didn't do what he was supposed to do at Juve. He's actually regressed quite a bit this season, and the team has regressed quite a bit this season. But at the same time, it clearly shows that there's unsettlement from the top.
Yes. To be honest, we had said that we expected Motta to be sacked 2 weeks ago, weeks ago, after the first thrashing, let alone after the second one. Like, right?
You were expecting him to get sacked. Yes, now. Not you predicted he'd be sacked.
No. We thought he would be sacked immediately after the first thrashing, because in Italy, there is a culture of honor when it comes to football. Like, when you lose in a humiliating way, quite often you get sacked, you get dismissed immediately, you know? And it's not only in Italy, it's the whole you're getting sacked in the morning chant, you know, in the UK as well. In Italy, though, it's very prevalent. And to be honest, I'm surprised it took them so long. I think they had some things they had to sort out, maybe. Potentially, they were looking at other candidates because
and the money.
They didn't take advantage of the international break, not to mention the money. Exactly, they have to pay a very high fee to actually settle his contract.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did, though, take advantage of the... I think...
But it wasn't as early as it could have been. I think it was midway through the international break that the signing happened.
I think they're really making a gamble over here, because clearly I think this is the first time where they're in a bit of shock and panic that they might not make Champions League.
Yeah.
And Juve, this season, we know what their financials are like, when typically they're the most, let's say, sustainable team because of the profit they make from ticket sales, so on and so forth. This season, they don't even have a bloody sponsor, especially after the crisis that they went through last season where they hadn't made Champions League because of the deduction of 10 points, so on and so forth. So right now, their figures are really, really quite detrimental. They need Champions League. So I think they're willing to, I don't know what the exact number is, how much it cost them to sack Motta, but they will essentially be making a profit if they pay that and they make Champions League, because making Champions League is like 100 million nowadays.
No. And they have the Club World Cup as well.
Exactly.
With Inter. So,
there we go. Inter special.
I don't know. It's just what I find very strange is the fact that, you know, you get Giuntoli in and he's just like, okay, we're going to get in Motta. This is going to be the new project. Okay, fine. It wasn't working, but I would be worried as a Juve fan. Because of the fact that, okay, now I have a bit of trouble with the coach. I don't know if there's going to be a long-term solution. If it's just the interim manager, they're looking for something else, they might lose out on Champions League. And the fact that even their transfer policy has been very, very weird. They've just gotten... They had the luck that they were able to set up the next-gen team, in my opinion, before a lot of other teams. And they got rid of most of their players.
Because they're using it as a money-making factory, as opposed to balancing it out intelligently.
But it's like you lost... So now Fagioli is out. So Meretti. That is out. Meretti. Huijsen. Huijsen is the biggest.
The biggest loss. Bro, they sold Huijsen.
To get Kelly.
And they bought Kelly, and Kelly was more expensive than Huijsen.
Yeah.
Bro, Real Madrid want Huijsen.
Yeah.
No one wants Kelly.
Yeah, but like, Newcastle got Kelly for free, no? Something like, I think. I could be wrong. I could be completely wrong.
Well, I'm sure he didn't cost them an arm and a leg.
No, but it's like, and you guess, okay, Colomwani, he's great, but he's a loan. It's a dry loan, just costing them money. And then what's going to happen? Like, end of the season is going to come, they're going to end up the same thing.
They've brought in a manager who prefers the profile of Vlahovic.
Yes.
That sounds just a disaster. So what to expect from Tudor? It's three at the back, high pressing, high intensity.
No wingers.
No wingers.
Which is hilarious because Juve have like 97 wingers at this stage. So the team, again, we've seen this so many times with Serie A teams where the team isn't set up for the manager. like Conte Sao, for example, had that. And Ranieri, but he kind of made it work. But at least what you're getting with Tudor, because the thing that I see with Juve is Motta came in and Motta and Giuntoli, and instantly it was incredibly cutthroat. Danilo, who's the captain, out. Chiesa, who is the pride and joy of Juventini, out instantly. And Fagioli, out. Miretti, out. All of these long-standing players, just completely out. And it was incredibly cutthroat. And then they brought in these players, Cope Miners, Douglas Luiz, and we're all very excited about their profile. But it was very, very cold. The approach was cold. Motta came in, Giuntoli came in, they slapped their cocks on the table and they said, this is exactly how it needs to be, non-negotiable, you, out. Your wages are too high, out. This is the project. And they lost a certain, that kind
authenticity.
Authenticity and the sports team kind of feeling of it's almost like a family, but it's not, it's a sports team.
Yeah.
Tudor, on the other hand, Juve legend, loves the club. He's a fan. Drove 10 hours to get there. He's passionate. He can drive the players. Players will look up to him. He'll speak from experience about representing the club. And at least they're getting that figure that could create this kind of camaraderie and togetherness. However, as a fan.
He does have a background of falling out with players as well at the door. So I think
it's only nine games. Yes, in nine games, he's enough to be a motivator.
I highly doubt he'll stay on till next season, to be honest with you.
I don't think they'll keep him.
Yeah, yeah.
Unless he has some miraculous, you know, run.
Wins all nine of them.
Yeah, wins the Club World Cup.
It's funny. He had that run with Lazio. Yeah. He had a stupendous run at Lazio. The only team that was in better form than Lazio was Atalanta. Obviously, though, he's going to fall out with, what's his name? The Lotito. Of course, he's going to fall out with Lotito. But I'll tell you, Elkan is no better nowadays.
I'm just trying to think. A quick question before we move on on this. But do you think that getting sacked was all on him? Do you think it was on the project? Do you think he was trying, you know, he had the boots that he was trying to deliver too big for his...
So I think that, first of all, the expectations were kind of skewed. I understand that the humiliating nature of the losses made it a little bit more complicated for the management. But as in, had they lost those games only 1-0 or 2-1, maybe he would still be there right now, right? Because I do think that they're aware that this was a long-term project and that they're employing a manager whose best season was a fourth-place finish with Bologna, which is very impressive, to be honest. Incredibly. But the atmosphere is that of an underdog at Bologna, where you're empowered by the fans no matter what. Mm-hmm. Where at Juve, there's a lot more pressure. Mm-hmm. You slip up once, all of a sudden you're looking at huffs and puffs and at the side, you know, criticism in the newspapers. And it's a whole different playing field. And it takes some adapting to it, especially when you give the guy a completely new team. Because he didn't even have, like, senior figures in the dressing room. You know, because they sold Danilo as well, for example. You know, who had been there for a while. So I think it's a combination of things. I think when it comes to the expectations, maybe they weren't realistic from Giuntoli's end. When it came to performances, Motta, after Bremer's injury, everything went down.
No, I was going to say, there was a bit like of injuries potentially as well. Because, I mean, they had the first eight games. I don't remember. I think they had like 7 wins in a row.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
They were flying.
One
the
goal
beginning.
Conceded. Exactly. And then was it Bremer that got injured? There was
Bremer did his ACL. Then Cabal did his ACL as well.
And just to say...
Gonzalez was out as well.
When it comes to like whose fault is it at the end of the day, I think point number one is... whose fault is it that Spurs aren't doing well? Whose fault is it that every coach that United hire, they're sacking and everyone's this coach out, this coach out, this coach out, when it's the Glazers that are clearly fucking up the entire squad? I think with Juve, it's quite similar ever since it's gone from Agnelli to Elkan. The vision isn't the same. You lost someone that was Juve through and through, who knew ball, who knew the club, who was a winner. He wanted the team to win. He did everything for the team to win. With Elkan, it's a little bit different. I don't know if he's a bit more green, as in like he doesn't quite know what he's doing, or he's trying to involve himself more. He hired Giuntoli, left it all up to him. I understood the vision from day one that you have to get rid of the players that the dead
the
weight.
The dead weight, yeah.
I got that. In Maltese, you say pass, like slowly, man, piano. You don't have to change everything in one fucking summer because that's going to create unsettlement.
Yeah.
And then Giuntoli, of course, he got carried away with the budget because if you can get Douglas Luiz, if you can get Coop Miners, if you can get Kefren Turam, if you can get Cabal, if you can get all of these guys, great. But in the first half of the season, they're playing some games with 5 outfield players on the bench, dog. Mm-hmm. 5 or 4 exactly. Outfield players
and next-gen players starting, like Mbangula, Savona.
From the start, so clearly, Giuntoli did a shit job. Mm-hmm. He did a shit job. Did Motta do a great job with the way he got the team to play? No, but it is a shared, like you said, a shared responsibility.
Uh-huh.
But top down. Exactly. I'll blame the top before I blame Motta and before I blame
the players.
That's like a domino effect. I mean, obviously, like Coop Miners is not going to play like Coop Miners at Atalanta if the whole team is not playing like super great.
Exactly.
You know, everyone else is going to be like a bit more suppressed. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, I feel that they'll have a bit of a bounce because mm-hmm. they'll change. They'll come and give them some energy, like show me what you have, like, you know, who was going to start and who can play. And I feel like Tudor get that a bit out of them. And, you know, then it's going to be the normal media cycle. Mm-hmm. They're going to be on the thing. They'll be like, Tudor, is he going to stay or not? And then whatever, we'll end up in the same situation.
There's that.
Depends if they spend big again next season.
Uh-huh. Just another thing to add as well to your point and to the point we made earlier as well. What's his name? Giuntoli wanted Mancini and Elkan wanted Tudor. So that is another thing that really shows that they're listening to Giuntoli less and less. Because first Giuntoli said Motta's going to stay and they sacked him. And he fell out with him. And then Giuntoli said that he wants Mancini and they got Tudor. So clearly he's losing the trust of his higher-ups and of Elkan as well. So I think he's on a slippery slope right now. And I think that is a shared responsibility in that sense.
It's like with time... football is becoming more and more cutthroat, as you're saying, man. The patience has really dipped, man. Nowadays, I remember when we were kids, everyone used to say, you need a season or two before you adapt to a team. That's gone. You don't have a season or two. No, you either hit the ground running or you're loaned out or you're sold like immediately.
Instant gratification.
Exactly. It's crazy. Yeah. It's crazy. But anyway, I think we should move on to Inter. Considering
can I just ask you one question?
Please.
So you said that you feel like Juve are going to go on a bounce with Tudor, like they're going to react, and that's the kind of thing that you'd expect. 9 games to go, you bring in a manager with huge testicles, who loves the club, who knows the club, drove 10 hours, whatever. If we're thinking long term, do we think Tudor could be a potential fit? Could he be the guy that can sort Juve's problems out?
I think... potentially, he can do a good job there.
Better than Motta?
I think he can do a better job than Motta, yes. I think that Tudor is a good manager. He's shown good things. But once again, this level is new for him. So it's kind of like...
What's the highest thing. He's been?
Lazio. I think
Marseille. How did he do with Marseille? Came third, second?
He had the highest win percentage there was at one point. He had a great winning percentage at them. Don't quote me because obviously there's PSG.
But I think they came like third.
They were definitely in the mix. Yeah. No, he did quite well over there. And what impresses me as well is how he did with ninth with Verona.
Mm-hmm.
Ninth with Verona. He had his front three that were all on double digits, goals and assists. He had Caprari. He had Giovanni Simeone and what was it? Barak. Those guys were all on double digits, goals and assists.
Yeah,
so
DeMarco as well, that team, I think.
Madonna. Mm. Madonna.
Yeah. I'm just trying to see. Tudor finished third place in League One.
Then he went to Lazio.
Exactly. So he qualified for the Champions League. Then he went to Lazio. No, he's at Juve, of course, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And he did really well at Lazio as well. So far his trajectory has been up. We'll see if it's a Juve thing that all of a sudden...
And it very much can be because we've seen that trajectory with Amorim, for example, and then he went to United and it got fucked. So many clubs ruin the potential of young managers.
Yeah. It's true.
Inter?
Yes.
Inter. Let's start with Inter.
Why is everyone at Inter balding? Why?
Some people are reverse balding.
That's true. What a hairline.
I don't know. I think Barella just like said, fuck it, he's a baller. Like we were saying before, he's like millionaire, 28. four kids, five kids.
He's got four or five kids, really.
Yeah, yeah, so. It's for sure, like, for sure four or something like that. I don't know. I think it's also to do with the fact that the average age is like 29.
Which fair enough.
Or it's something like Marotta knows. I think maybe there's like some correlation after see with like the hairline and how well they do. Like if you're completely bald.
High testosterone.
Like in fact, remember like when Cambiasso joined Inter, he was balding at that time. Then like,
yo, it's true.
It's when you sign them. It's probably the peak of when you sign them. Fair. When they said balding, and then like.
Even Çalhanoğlu got him nice and there in his reception. Yeah. Okay. So I think we should start off by comparing this year's Inter to last year's Inter. So last year, Inter were extremely dominant, and there were moments in the league where they looked pretty much invincible.
Like, apart from Sassuolo.
Apart from Sassuolo, yes, who proved to be their dark horse. This year, I would say, I would go as far as to say that they are quite a shadow of their former selves, right? When it comes to the performances and the conviction that they put on the pitch. Yet they still find themselves, of course, competing on three fronts. What do you think has changed since last year?
I think this year, the biggest difference was definitely after the Euro last year, and there was the Coppa and stuff like that, the players seem more tired. So I think the first thing I noticed at the beginning of the season, some of the players looked more tired. And you had people like Lautaro, who last year was up here, like very, very high. Now this year, he still had like very good games, but I don't think he was consistently playing at that level. Yeah. And when you have these factors that come in, I mean, besides the fact that you also have Hakan and Thuram, when they got injured, they were like a bit more muted afterwards. I think the biggest difference has been definitely in Çalhanoğlu. And the fact that we cannot rotate certain players very well. I think that has been the biggest difference.
Who are the players?
So definitely Hakan. I think we brought in some new players in the midfield. I think Azlani, although I would still say that we should keep him, he's been playing better, but he hasn't been able to get up to the same level.
He doesn't do his role. This is something we often say on the podcast, that his skill set is completely different to Çalhanoğlu. Çalhanoğlu's got a very unique skill set that the system needs, quite frankly. Yeah. And Azlani doesn't quite give you that, does he?
But I think the biggest difference is, so Inzaghi last year have found this very good rhythm, you know, between Mkhitaryan, I mean, it's been for the last 2 years, Mkhitaryan, Hakan, Barella. It's been like a very solid three. And the problem is now, once Hakan wasn't playing to the same level that he was in certain games, or where we couldn't play him, the players that we put in instead of him haven't been as good. So Azlani, I think he's had some good games, but he's not obviously at that level. I think the biggest difference is when we rotate Barella, because Barella's playing every game, including Coppa, including Champions League, including with Italy, and like long periods of the game. And then you put in someone like Fratesi, and all of a sudden the dynamic changes completely. He's a completely different player.
Absolutely.
I don't think he's a bad player. I just feel that now we've gotten to the point where he doesn't fit in the system.
I might as well ask you this. Frank asks, do you keep or sell Fratesi in the summer?
I think at this point you sell, because I think it's still at a point where there is interest in him, because obviously he still played some games with Italy. He still somehow will manage to go into a game and get on the score sheet. So some teams will still look at him, and probably they see him at like someone that they could take and put him in their team and do better. Which is worse, obviously, for us, because potentially it could go to someone like Roma. Hit 10 goals in a season. But at this point, I think you need to recycle that money somewhere else in the team. I mean, now Sukic, I don't know how to say his name, should be coming in. Potentially, he might be, you know, the replacement for Hakan, or like a kind of rotation. But
he's young, isn't he? How old? He's like
20.
I think early 20s.
Nice.
But it's I think that's the biggest thing, that this year some players dropped off. I don't think because they're worse players, but maybe they needed a bit more of a break, or they weren't able to hit those same strides that they did last season.
There was no break, quite frankly.
And it's been much, much more difficult because, you know, Lautaro is not, you know, having a good game, or not having a good game, not having a great game. You can't just say like, okay, we're just going to put in like someone else a bit more fresh, or like rotate him a bit, because you know, we got in Taremi, who I thought would be much better.
Yeah, same here.
Frankly, I think Arnautovic has been the best rotation, and above that, like even Correa from the door. But then you have these players, you have Arnautovic, Correa, Taremi, they can't really change the game. They're not a Lautaro or a Thuram. I feel like you have two strikers who are much higher than everyone else you bring in. And then the other thing was the defense. You know, we had some issue, people who were injured. I think Acerbi made a really big difference. Somehow, I didn't believe, because whenever I came back in, I feel like he was playing quite well. But even when I went to see them against Como, there was a bit... They felt less organized. Mm. I feel like Bissek is doing well. He's growing as a player, but I still feel like he needs like that experienced player next to him. And also this putting in Carlos Augusto on the
left center back.
It works, you know, if you have a really fit DeMarco on the side and they can interchange and you have someone reliable like Acerbi in the back. But I feel this is the issue. The issue is that we have a really good, I wouldn't say just only 11, but there's a really good team, a really good system. Some players don't fit. I think those are the last pieces of the puzzle. Yeah. We need some more people who can come in with energy and they're fit in the system well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Isn't this the... Because Jake and I have exhausted our listeners, always saying the same thing, that do Inter have great depth? Yes, individually. There are fantastic players. Last time, I remember when Inter were playing Milan, I had a look at Milan's bench. This was before all the signings. And I had a look at Inter's bench. And I'm like, fuck me, man. The amount of relatively great players. But they don't. But it's such a unique system that Inzaghi has set up with very unique players. Like Mkhitaryan, for example, the way that he plays in midfield and the way Barella plays in midfield. Like, Barella is the gel of the entire team. I know people like to think that it's the Regista that's the gel of the entire team. But you see, when Inter turned defense into attack, it's Barella in the middle, 3-4 touches, and he absolutely changes the tempo of the game.
He has a bit of flair, and he has that, like, he's, you know, aggressive. Mm-hmm. He will shout at you if you're not doing it. So really he, like, keeps the tempo. Unique
characteristics. He has that together with youth, together with fitness, together with drive and maturity and intelligence. And then you have players like Lautaro, who could at times be a very lethal finisher. But then he's also great playing off the shoulder of the striker. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then you have Thuram, who's a target man, but also charges. You have DiMarco, who's an out wide left wing back, who has some of the best crossing that I've seen in fuck it, left back Serie A history. Of the best. He puts players on the fucking spot and set pieces.
And especially him and Bastoni.
Bastoni.
I think that's the main, like him and Bastoni together, they just have such good chemistry. And I think the other, like, I think this season specifically, Dumfries has been like much, much better than the previous season. Not that he was ever a bad player, but he was...
He's on form, bro.
He is. He's new level. Yes. Mm-hmm. Like, he's surpassed what I thought he could
do. I didn't think he could do some of the things he's done this season, to be honest with you.
But like, then if you take that, so I think this is the biggest thing. So just look at... So you're mentioning DeMarco and Dumfries. But then we have the substitutes for them. Mm. And look how many times we've tried to change. But it's not even been like this season. It's been years. Mm-hmm. Like DeMarco, I feel like, was a natural fit. And all of a sudden, you know, we've been years. We've been going from like Biraghi, Ansaldi, trying to find someone who can play these.
Gosens.
Exactly, Perisic. Gosens. I mean, Perisic, I wouldn't say was ever.
He had a great season.
But it's been like, I can out them. I had Buchanan, you know, and I remember there was a guy, Valentin Lazzaro, who got him in.
He's doing well at Torino now.
He's doing really well, bro. He's doing really well at Torino.
But I think Augusto is very good.
I think Carlos is very good now, but like now on the other side, you know, Zalewski. He had a few good games.
Yeah, he fits.
The one that I went to watch, he ruined it.
Exactly.
With his chest.
But the fact of the matter, guys, is that there are all these... It's like we're speaking about a team that were champions last year. It's like we're speaking about Napoli. They were champions one season, then they finished in 10th. Or Milan finished first and then finished, well, second.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is Inter are still competing on three fronts. Mm-hmm. Is that because if we're mentioning the players and their fitness, because of course the schedule is much different this year and they didn't have a break throughout the summer, and again they won't have a break, and Inter actually, they have the oldest squad in Serie A. Inter at the moment, along with Rayo Vallecano, have the oldest squad in the top five leagues. You know what else they had the oldest squad? Just a fun fact. 2009-2010 when you won the treble, but that's a conversation for later.
Yeah.
Inter are still doing well because Inter are first, by 3 points over Napoli with 9 games to go. They're in the round of 16 of the Champions League, or quarterfinals.
Yeah, me, bro. I've turned it off.
Quarterfinals, no. Quarterfinals against Bayern Munich. They're in the Coppa Italia semifinals against Milan. Is this testament to, because if the players aren't doing that well, is this testament to Inzaghi?
The thing is, we're saying the players aren't doing so well. I mean, I think overall the team is still doing very well. I think the team, they're not maybe as performing as high as last year, or they're putting in some performance. I don't think the team is, you know, consistently performing badly. I think that's it. But yes, I mean, as much as some people like to criticize the system that Inzaghi has in place, because it, like, when you have issues where it's not working, you know, he can't really pivot.
Plan B, but right?
It still provides consistency to the players, because then when you have players that are, might be, like, you know, mentally, they're saying, you know, today's not my best game or something like that. If you have a system to rely on, if you have good teammates to rely on, and you know exactly how it's going to be, that gives consistency to the whole team. So, yes, I think a lot of it has to be testament to him, definitely. I mean, he's shown that he can compete. I mean, he did so well with Lazio. I mean, he managed to compete in the Coppa Italia. He took them to the Champions League. He took them through the group stages, which I think is a very good thing. I mean, he's won so many trophies with Inter. But it's that, and I think it's also the management setup. When we're speaking about Juventus, I think Inter, since they've, I think now they've stabilized a bit, so it's become better. And giving the reins to Marotta and his team, I think it's very positive. And
that's,
I think it lets
us that, man.
I think leaving Inzaghi, you know, to coach, to be involved in the teams, but you know, you had Ausilio and you had Marotta and stuff like that, and his team just taking care of everything else. That is the, I think that also is what makes a good team.
We once got an interesting question on Inzaghi about why he's not spoken about so widely and held to high esteem as a manager compared to the likes of, for example, I don't know, like De Zerbi has never done what Inzaghi has done, yet he had the whole world talking about
him. But to be
him,
fair,
right?
De Zerbi went to the
Premier League.
Yeah. He went anti-competed. But he was even prior to going to the Premier League, everyone was talking
about
him. But
the fact of the matter is, the Prem wanted him. After Conte did what he did at Juve, the Prem wanted him. Ancelotti, for example, after he did what he did. Capello, after he did what he did. Yeah. But for some reason, Inzaghi,
he's not very spoken,
he's not very
about
sought
it.
After. Like,
I think I've only seen links. United, there was links. Okay,
no, who hasn't,
United,
though?
Job,
I've been linked.
Everyone
to United.
And their mum has been linked.
I don't know. I think it's because he's not, maybe he's already at a high position. So, like, it's not like saying De Zerbi is going to go, you know, Brighton's going to come after Inzaghi unless they're going to offer him some super wage, and they're just like, listen, you're going to stay by the sea, and he's going to be like, I really want to go to England. Maybe he has been approached silently and he's been like, there's no way I'm leaving Italy, for example. So who knows?
Could it be maybe as well because his style isn't as flashy, because he's a little bit old school as a manager?
You out after a yellow card.
Yellow card, immediate substitution. Like,
I think it could be. I think he could be. There's potential that he's just not, like, never given out his interest. Or maybe he said he's only interested in certain big jobs. And then if they're like things like, I don't know, Bournemouth or something like this, they're coming after him, he's like, no. But then he's not at the level where, like, a Barcelona or Real Madrid are going to be. I don't think it's the same fit. Because I think he also fits in with Inter, not only because he's a good manager, but because he's very pragmatic and because he manages to work within his means.
Exactly.
I think that is the biggest benefit of him. So he fits very well in
Inter. In Italy in general, because the budgets aren't great in Italy. As the great thing is the combination of him and Marotta. The combination of Inzaghi and Marotta, because Marotta keeps feeding Inzaghi players that he can work with, and players within Inter's budget that they can work with, like the signing of Di Marco, for example, was just perfect for Inter, for example. The fact that they nicked Thuram from Milan last minute, they just knew it was going to work. And
Even the Çalhanoğlu snipe.
The Çalhanoğlu snipe. And the reason I said earlier that the whole Marotta thing, Marotta being so good, is going to fuck Milan. Not only because he keeps on making Inter stronger, and as long as Inter have Marotta, they're going to be good. But Marotta made Paratici look so good. Now Milan are going to get Paratici thinking he's all that. But the second Paratici got power, he went
everything went downhill.
Juve got docked points and they haven't recovered
since. And they had
since.
The FBI in
exactly.
In their office.
Exactly.
He allegedly left.
How convenient he left the country.
He left the Spurs.
Motta had someone like that trying to get a boat to Sicily at that point. Go on holiday, bro, on your own dinghy.
That's fine. It's fine. Now he just trade. He'll trade Walker for, like, I don't know, some one value Walker at 60 million.
Exactly. Yo. Do I hate it?
So Inzaghi, we can agree, is perfect for this.
I think he fits in very well. Mm-hmm. Why he's not as, you know, I don't know, because that's the thing. Then if you like look at other people who follow the sport, you look at these, like, I don't know, YouTube kind of people who actually maybe look at the numbers a bit more. He's usually floated up there, some of the most successful managers.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing if you look at like the stats, because Inter are up there.
Of course.
Obviously he's operating in...
It's a tabloid, so largest... don't seem to like him, I guess. Don't seem to care about him, rather.
Let me jump to a Frank question,
because it's incredibly
relevant. Shout out Frank. Hey, Frankie.
That's an actual Frank question.
If Inzaghi loses the Scudetto this season, how would his 4 years in charge be viewed? Is it as simple to say one league in that period with the squad he has had not good enough? Or should fans look at the bigger picture in terms of finances, football style, and the run to the Champions League final?
This is a similar criticism to what Ancelotti had when he had that golden era at Milan, because he barely won the Scudetto. He didn't win it many times with a team that should have, in theory, on paper, been dominant.
But I mean, it depends. So that obviously depends. If they don't win the league this season, but win the Champions League.
Let's say you win the Coppa. Out of the Champions League against Bayern Munich.
I come second in the league. No, look, I think, and this is maybe my two cents, and obviously I'm very biased.
£3.99 a month.
I feel like if he had to default, he would default to the league. And I think somehow, or at least usually, obviously not in a Conte season, this is the main issue, that Napoli tend to fall off a bit more towards the end of the season, and I think even more so having lost Guevara. And they seem to be a bit less stable, at least in the second half.
One win in their last six or seven.
So I feel that now, if he had to lose the Scudetto, yes, it would reflect poorly on the season. Because I feel that the dynamic now shifted. Let's say we're a few weeks back, where Inter were still chasing, and let's say Napoli continued on this run. You know, they could chalk it off to Napoli having a very good season if Inter were still strong, competitive, and they might have, you know, got it down to this, and we got Taremi, we got these players, they didn't fit in the thing, we need to continue to grow. And maybe he would have argued... tired players, etc. So to like to actually come to an answer, because I rant. Yes, I think if he loses the Scudetto this season, it's I wouldn't say it's poorly on the 4 years as a manager. I still think he's been great over these 4 years, but I think it would be a disappointment for the season.
Yeah, especially, I think for the 4 years, I don't think it would reflect badly when you consider what happened last year with ownership, for example, with what's Zhang?
Zhang.
And that...
Suning.
With that whole fucking shit show and Inter being hundreds of millions in debt and not being able to pay off the loan and so on and so forth. They're getting...
Zhang was in debt. The Suning were in debt.
Suning.
And they just put Inter up as like collateral.
Exactly.
If you can't pay the loan, you get Inter.
Exactly. But to be in that situation,
billionaire thing.
And still manage to do that well, that's testament to Marotta and Inzaghi, right?
Yes.
So we've spoken about this Inzaghi era. What do you think the post-Inzaghi era holds?
When is the posting, Zach?
That's a good question.
Part of the question, I guess.
So, as Milan fans, it seemed that all Milan fans came to an agreement that Pioli's cycle had come to its end, like, mm-hmm. naturally, right? Uh-huh. After some time, like, he won what he had to win. The effect, the kind of, like, charm and charisma and his ability to motivate the players seemed to wear off towards the end. And it was almost like a universally known thing uh-huh. that Pioli's time was up at Milan. What do you think the indicators will be that Simone Inzaghi's time at Inter is up?
So I think the biggest indicators would be if we churn some players. So some players now, they start to rotate. So I don't know, they retire. Mm-hmm. Acerbi retires. Mkhitaryan retires. Maybe we lose some players. I don't know, they sell someone. And we bring in a new batch of players,
mm-hmm.
supposedly to fit in his system.
Mm-hmm.
If that isn't working, then in that case, it is a very clear indicator that his time at Inter, be it as pragmatic as he is, as frugal he is with the money,
mm-hmm.
That he managed to work in his means, if he doesn't manage to get the best out of a new crop of players or to improve, that is when potentially you need someone to come in and change. Because there is a chance that some players either drop off or they have to leave the team. And now we continue to try and, you know, replenish, get new players, someone to play like Mkhitaryan, but it's not Mkhitaryan.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Someone to play like Hakan, but he's not Hakan, you know, because that's what we're always speaking about, you know, that we don't have players who can do this.
Yeah.
The season, this is the worry, the season they got in some people, obviously they were constrained again. Mm-hmm. Arnautovic Correa didn't leave, so they couldn't get in certain players in the attack. Other players didn't want to leave, so they couldn't really maneuver that much. Maybe next season, this summer, it will be a bit easier. If we do that, and next season, for example, we end up with the same thing. Ah, we got you this player and this player and this player. They're not fitting into the system. Then we try to get some new players. They're not fitting in. I think at that point, that is when, mm-hmm. you know, his time at Inter.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sure Marotta will already be on. It's either that, or if he remains...
Sorry, Marotta will already be on?
He'll already be on, you know, lookout.
Uh-huh.
He's always on the lookout, dude. For a new coach. There's that.
For the audio listeners, he pointed one way and another way.
The other thing is, if he manages to continue to keep up, you know, with the status quo, I think his era will end once the director change. So obviously Marta's not getting younger. If there's a change in the directorship, or maybe even the hedge fund now decides that they want to move on, they want to sell it, a new owner comes in, I think that will probably be when his era will change.
Mm-hmm.
His era will end. Because I'm imagining someone coming in with money, and like we mentioned before, they want that instant gratification. I don't feel like he's the guy that gets you instant gratification.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go a bit simpler than that. Do you think there could be a scenario where not much changes? Of course, over the next few seasons, some players will retire, some players will leave, of course. Do you think there's a fear that because he has one nailed on system, as we've been drilling, doesn't really have a plan B, maybe he'll adapt his game a little bit, but maybe there's the risk of him getting figured out? We already saw that, for example, Milan under Pioli, they hadn't beaten Inter, they lost like nine in a row, for example. And now, on the other hand, Inter can't seem to beat Milan so far this season from the two games that they've played. Milan have gotten the upper hand of Inter. Obviously, in the second game, Inter got the draw at the end. They pretty much dominated most of the game. You were there, you know.
Yeah.
But do you think there's a risk that teams like Milan and other top teams could figure out this Inter? In fact, I think it's already happening. Slowly, to the point where Inter's game is much less fluid and they're way more reliant on crosses, for example.
Yeah.
That's not only the fitness, but it has to be just simply people are getting used to Inter. They've been dominant for three seasons now. Okay, they had finished third or fourth the season before they won the league, but they got to the Champions League final. All eyes were on them. And then they won the league. They destroyed everyone. And now they're in all competitions again. That's 3 years of case study. 3 years of Inter being what every other team wants to be. Could he be figured out?
Yes, I think for sure. I think more than specifically a system, because I think, you know, there have been even videos and tactical analysis and stuff like this. I don't think that, you know, probably if we can kind of figure out what he's doing, it's not like something that, you know, a Guardiola couldn't have figured it out or something like that. I think it's more the players are getting a bit more figured out. I think, you know,
your answers so far have been top,
right? Hey, man, I love you.
I think that is what's changed as well, and that's what could happen. I don't know. We'll see. I think at the moment he's definitely not. I don't feel like he's moving towards the end of his era. I feel like, yes, if he's going to be, you know, getting stuck, then they might consider.
Because it has to be said that the season at the top, no one's really dominant, which isn't usually the case in Serie A. Usually you have a team that hardly loses, hardly draws. Over here, Inter, Napoli and Atalanta have 7 draws each. Then the losses just scale. So Inter have 3, Napoli 4, Atalanta 5.
That's not very dominant. The goals conceded as well. Yes, that's goals. Very, very...
Mm. It's true. Napoli 23 goals conceded compared to Inter's 27 and Atalanta's 28.
And then Inter have the most goals scored, even higher than Atalanta this 65 season.
65 goals scored for Inter, 45 for Napoli, and 63 for Atalanta.
Crazy, man. Yeah. And look at the top three managers. Who are they? Probably the ones with the most Serie A experience. Apart from obviously Ranieri, but he had an unfair disadvantage.
He started with a handicap.
Exactly, literally. It's like that squibble race game when you give one of your opponents heroin. Yeah. Running backwards.
That's an extremely niche reference, brother.
Someone will get it for sure. And
someone out there's like, oh my god, squibble race.
Quibble race. I think quibble.
I think quibble.
I feel like I had something to say, but I forgot, so let's move swiftly.
So Charles asks, is Inter the main favorite for the Scudetto after their massive win against Atalanta 1 week ago? Do you have one hand on the trophy?
Can I just do this before you answer? Remaining fixtures. I'm going to include all competitions, obviously, from the Champions League. I can't tell you who you'd play in the semis and final if you make it that far.
You can try. Map it out.
The Sunday... Udinese, Inter home. And then Milan Inter, midweek.
Correa is apparently rumored to start.
Yes. Against Udinese, that might not be a crazy, terrible shout to have someone a bit nippy.
He'll get squeezed out by the size of that team.
Can get squeezed out, can also get played through. But they're very organized.
They're low. Yeah.
Interesting. We'll speak about it.
I think Arnautovic is almost a better shout. Go on.
Fair. Inter Udinese, shortly followed by Milan Inter, shortly followed by Parma Inter, shortly followed by Bayern Inter, shortly followed by Inter Cagliari, shortly followed by Inter Bayern, Bologna Inter, Inter Milan, Inter Roma, Inter Verona, Torino Inter, Inter Lazio, Como Inter, and that's that.
Not the hardest running.
Compared
to the other teams challenging.
But the
also depends on how Inter do against Bayern.
And there's the Bologna away game.
You might chuck another two games.
Roma game, the Milan game, the Bayern game.
Who are on the bracket of...
Sorry?
I'll take a look at that in the meantime.
Tell us, what do you think? Do you think Inter have one hand on the trophy?
I think one hand on the trophy, no. I'd like to still think they're favourites at the moment. I feel like now they've positioned themselves well that they should, you know, be able to see it out. But the margins are so slim. Mm. But all they need is like, you know, a slip up against, you know, you just go away to Cagliari. You know, the don't score. Or they pull like these games that they've been having and instead of getting, you know, at the moment they have 7 draws. If they end the season with like 10 draws. Because they're just not putting away the goals or the chances. That's going to cost you... I feel like that will cost you the league. Especially if... especially when Conte is at the helm at Napoli. Even though they've fallen off. And I still don't feel like they can keep up the pressure. The fact that there's also Atalanta. You know, thereabouts. I mean, how many points off are Atalanta?
Not many, I believe around 5. I'm just going to fact check. They're 58 and Inter are 64, so that's 6 points. But like you said, that's just a couple of poor performances. Two bad performances is all it takes. And like you said, Napoli can remain consistent now that they have Neres back, for example. We've really praised Conte for what he's done while Neres was injured. But at the end of the day, he's only won 1-7. So maybe we're over-romanticizing what he's done with Raspadori.
What do you think of Raspadori? Because as a link to Inter, he might he's very unfair.
He's had such an unfair career because he hasn't played. Now he's playing in his position. Because as a winger, he's not it. As a sole striker, he's not it. And then at a point at Sassuolo, he was playing attacking midfield, even secondary striker. Off Caputo's shoulder, attacking midfield. Yeah. Now that he's playing off of the shoulders of a target man, that's where he excels, man.
You think he would be a good replacement for Lautaro?
Not replacement.
Not replacement, rotation.
Yes, he's almost perfect.
To be honest, yeah.
Almost perfect. He's an Inter fan as well.
Yeah, he probably fits in the budget. I feel like, imagine the situation where they would have bought Raspadori instead of Fratesi.
Yeah, that would have been better.
I think Raspadori is destined for the Inter move.
I remember once Sassuolo lost to Inter and he went and like celebrated. He joined them in the dressing room.
I think that is one of the targets this summer. We'll see. We'll see what they pull out of their hat.
Mm-hmm. What Marotta will...
Who's on a free? Who's on a free this
Exactly. That's the same way Toronto signed Insigne. No, but he's just going on transfer market. Who's on a free in 6 months?
That worked out well for them.
Yeah,
they're putting banners around all of Toronto trying to kick him out. Trying to bully him out.
That's insane, man.
Calling him Insigniente. Or Insignifico, they're calling him.
Because he's doing so bad.
Because he's on 12 million a season and he won't budge. He won't leave.
He's not playing.
He's not. I'm not sure if he's not playing, but apparently the club tried to sell him and he refused. Uh-huh. He refused the move. Obviously, he's on 12 million a year.
Mm-hmm. Just to say as well, just to go back to a point, because the question was, if Inter have one hand on the trophy after the trashing of Atalanta, but why don't we talk about Inter's failed opportunity in that six-pointer against Napoli when there, for the majority of the game, Inter had one hand on the trophy? Until, what was it, the 90th minute when Billing got that goal.
Yeah.
That was...
what a moment. Huh?
That was it for Inter. They could have done it there and then, pretty much. That was the moment.
I mean, you summarize. I was watching it, I remember. And it's always when I get to the point at the end of the game, you're just like, okay, now we're just like, you want it to end. like both because you're just like, okay, these next 10 minutes, I don't want to watch them because I just want them to be over so we win.
Jake in the derby, della Madonnina.
So it's like, let's just get it over and done. Like, let's just call it now. And then these things happen. And then it's the opposite when you're losing.
Uh-huh.
And you're just like, you see, and you're like, it's okay, we're 15 minutes left. Exactly. And then you look at the time again, and it's like extra time. You're like, what the fuck? Yeah. It's only been 2 minutes.
The 81st minute comes, you're like, fuck, man. Then all of a
78,
sudden,
you're like, it's all right.
Uh-huh. And then, bro, in 2 minutes' time, additional time is going up. Yeah. Like, it's crazy how time changes.
But then you see something like an 8 minute extra time, you're like, 8 minutes, yeah. Mm-hmm. 8 minutes, we're going to score.
And then a goal kick takes 2 minutes.
So I was saying, someone was interviewing a referee, I can't remember who it was, potentially Mark Clattenburg, something like that. And he asked him, what would you change in football if you had to change something as a referee? He said, the one thing could change is if in time wasting, not to give a yellow card, say if you're time wasting a goal kick or time wasting a throw-in,
corner,
just swap it to the other team.
Ah,
so if you're time wasting a goal kick, it's a corner, not a yellow card. Yeah. So. Because they said, like, at the end of the time, if he wins 2 minutes, but he gets a yellow card.
And it also stops those Mourinho Real Madrid tactics where your player gets suspended on purpose, like he had done with Xabi Alonso and Sergio Ramos. You remember that? Time wasted so that they'll be suspended in a game that they didn't have to win, like, and then they were fit for an important game.
Paqueta fed an entire village in Brazil doing that in England.
Literally, like getting a yellow card in the 92nd minute, like
just walking off slowly, you know.
That's a great one. I also like the one where I forgot to say it, I think it was that really cool, bald, angry referee, the goat, Collina. I think he said, in the case of a penalty, remove rebounds. Spot
I like
kick,
that as well.
And that's all.
That's a cool kick.
That's all. Like, no rebound, no encroachment, and any of this fucking shit. Just simply penalty. Keeper saves it.
Goal kick.
And it's annoying because like sometimes when you see the save, you're like, oh my god, he fucking saved it. Uh-huh. And they just like tap it in.
My least favorite goal in the game is a penalty rebound. I wouldn't celebrate.
I think the worst is like if you go to watch a game, you're there, whatever, and you get like a notification. Penalty, like fuck, it's what's happening. Then you see keeper saved.
Yeah.
Then I check it again. It's still 1-0. I'm like, what happened?
And Bonfanta -2 +3. Yeah. He's on a 7. He missed the penalty and then he scored. He's on a 7.
You know what's a brutal one? He hit the post, he scored the rebound, but it doesn't count. Oh, he touched my it twice. God. Uh-huh. That's a brutal
that one. Happened to Milan this year. Teo was celebrating like he doesn't know the fucking rules. He thinks he's gonna fool everyone, whatever.
Shall we jump to the next question? Because we have some more listener
Hannah
questions.
Asks, not you, Hannah, it's a different Hannah, asks, what... Okay, so she asks what a question that's on every Inter fan's mind right now.
Who would win?
Yeah, is winning the triplete a realistic goal this season? Emphasis on realistic.
Can it happen? Yes. So, like, actually realistic... I think it's possible. I think, is it likely? No. I think winning the Scudetto is the most likeliest. Like, yes, that's the word I was trying to say.
The most likeliest.
It's the likeliest. Correct. The likeliest.
Most likeliest? Yes, definitely.
No, I think it was, is the Scudetto
that's
the likeliest?
That's how the system of a Down song goes. Yeah. Oh, the most loneliest day of my life.
Exactly. They didn't write that well. I'm going to mention heroin for the second time.
I held my ground. To clarify, I held my ground on, is the Scudetto the likeliest?
Okay.
Like competition. Okay, yeah. The grammar was just a fuck up from.
I don't think I phrased the question properly this episode. It's like copies.
Yeah. I've been amazing, man.
I mean, obviously, it's like the Scudetto, Coppa, and then Champions League. Is it possible that we're in the Champions League? I do think it's possible. I think it is, unfortunately, highly unlikely, given that we have a chance to beat Bayern. I feel like it is closer than people think. I don't think it's as Bayern. If you see the news, or at least if you're an Inter fan and seeing Bayern at the moment are like playing all these mind games, you know, we're not the favorites in this. Yeah. You know, Inter are a great club. You can never be favorites in the Champions League. I don't think it's like, you know, some kind of 70-30 thing. I think it's very close. Upamecano's out as well. So
they have a bit of a defensive crisis at the moment.
We'll see, you know, what happens with that.
And their coach is Vincent Kompany.
With Harry Kane, Musiala.
Yeah, but they have a great team. They have a very good
team. The only team that beat you in the Champions League, the only team that scored against you in the Champions League and the league group stage, what the fuck it's called, was Leverkusen. And they fucking murdered Leverkusen in the Champions League. And they've had their number.
And Leverkusen have been like, you know, doing very well against Bayern, you know, head to head. Okay, maybe not this season, but especially last season. I think even if we get past Bayern, we're just seeing the thing. It would be Barcelona.
Alfonso Davies did his ACL as well.
That's quite a crisis in the back.
But there's like Barcelona, who I don't know. I feel like Barcelona and Real Madrid, you know,
they're favorites.
These are they just favorites, and their style, I feel like, you know, counteracts kind of Inter's. I mean, there was also Liverpool at the beginning of the season. I said Liverpool are going to win the Champions League. They're out. Maybe PSG are, you know, a bit closer to the thing. So is it realistic potentially? Is it likely? I don't think so, unfortunately. I'd love it to happen.
Fair enough.
I wouldn't trade it for another banter era.
I wouldn't trade it
for this and then like another 10 years of Jonathan.
Is this realistic? Double, Coppa and League? Is that realistic? I think it is.
The problem is the semi-final against Milan.
Yo, with an affair in our venom.
That is the big one.
Yeah.
What do you think, Jake? What do you think
is going to happen in there?
In the semi-final.
I think that it would be extremely Milan.
I think Empoli are going to win it.
Yeah, so Empoli will get to the final for sure.
And get relegated.
I think it would be extremely Milan to like not qualify for the Champions League, but to beat Inter in the semi-final of the Coppa Italia and then lose the final of the Coppa Italia. Yes, I think that would be extremely
Milan. Would I prefer that? That would be hilarious.
So I know Milan are playing Napoli next, but I decided to wear this Napoli beanie today just to try to jinx, to bring you some misfortune. You know?
That's like when I brought you the Cope Miners kit of Atalanta and he scored the Doppietta against Milan.
But it's great, dude. It's like, you know,
it's a nice beanie. It's true.
If Milan beat Napoli, it's
I know it's a double-edged sword. I don't know what.
Yo.
If Milan lose, top four is very difficult. If Milan win, we're handing Inter the league. Yeah. Greta, who is the
other Inter fan
in the chat, yes, the other Inter patron, asks, "What are your top three favorite moments as an Inter fan?"
So I remember
Gabbiani,
Nagatomo.
Interbelt.
Interbelt is definitely a top
tier. Yes, really. Interbelt is great.
I think it's because of the band.
That Radu pass, the defense splitting pass, my top by Radu.
Favorite moment.
I think, so definitely there was the final against Bayern, because I just remember watching it. I don't even know if it was like a school night or something like that. I think at the time when we were still there, it was like the weekend before it was a Sunday, I think it was a Sunday before. I remember going in and being like, you know, super happy. I remember watching it, staying up. It was like one of the proper things. Other favorite Inter moments.
Can I feed one to you, see if you rank it up there? What you did last season in front of our fans' eyes when you won the 20th, the second star in San Siro away to Milan.
Yeah, no, I think it is. I think there is. And definitely there was this triplette. I think there was this resurgence. I will bundle it together. I think it was the recent resurgence, you know, after, because generally at the point is like, you don't lose interest, but you just end up becoming a bit numb, you know,
bro,
to like not competing. And then it's just like slowly getting into this new Spalletti. Okay, slowly we're back in the Champions League. We beat Tottenham. Then Conte comes back in. You're like, okay, we can win the league again, you know, getting all these players in. Suddenly we're playing well. Then Inzaghi comes in, you know, we're going straight, you know, to the final. I think at that point, I think the best moment was, I think I wouldn't call it my top three, but I just remember the emotion I had watching the final, being like, fuck, we're actually competing. They're nervous. Like, we're going to win. And then seeing Lukaku.
That was crazy.
I was never like angrier, I think, at I don't know, one
so
player.
Flat-footed man at that moment.
But anyway, no, I think it's that, and it's just because I'm seeing the formation of the when we won the triplette, and I think it's even the seasons before. I think there's that era in general, also maybe because I'm a bit nostalgic. It's when I was really getting into Inter, you know, when we had, you know, Mancini, these players from Lazio joined Mihailovic. I think that was also a cool moment, because I remember watching the final against Roma. I remember Figo scoring as well. And there was even Mihailovic scoring on free kicks. I remember just that era. It's so nostalgic.
Mihailovic scored was probably a free kick.
Yeah.
And it's just like that time, and probably even that time in my life was so much simpler, you know.
Oh, bro. Off air, we'll talk a lot about how stressful life has become. how much simpler it was in our youth.
Some of those players are dead nowadays, bro.
That's how it works.
True.
You know who was injured? Motta was injured in the
Champions League final.
Very cool.
This is a lovely question, to be honest.
He was injured, or was he? Was he?
Him and Busquets. The
infamous. So Matthias asks, if this era of Inter would face the treble winning Inter 10 times, how many wins, draws, and losses would there be?
Can we all do
I think
this?
There'd be a lot of draws. Yeah.
All draws. Let's just read out the lineup that Inter had for the Champions League final that year. So it was Julio Cesar, Maicon, Lucio, Samuel, Kivu, Cambiasso, Zanetti, Eto'o, Schneider, Pandev, and Milito. With Stankovic, Balotelli, Muntari, and Motta left out, by the way. Inter's current 11, of course, we have Sommer, Pavard, Acerbi, Bastoni, DeMarco, Barella, Hakan, Mkhitaryan, Dumfries, Lautaro, and Thuram.
Are we talking eras, or like this season Inter against that season Inter? Because it's very different if it's this season Inter and last season Inter.
So the thing is, I wouldn't even know how they play, because like even football has changed so much since then.
It's so hard to say.
So it's always difficult when you have these. I think it's easier to do it like man for man, like kind of who do you think or which parts were stronger. Like you definitely have to go, but I mean you definitely, as a defensive unit, you still have to go Mourinho era.
Yeah,
I feel like Sommer is not at the level of, as you just say, Hazard.
Yeah.
And as much as Dumfries improved, he's no Michael, in my opinion. And Lucio and Samuel were just like such a pair. Again, it might be like rose tinted glasses. That's the thing as well. Milito was like just that season specifically. I mean,
he was on top of the world.
It's crazy that he was like such a good, like, and he was in such good form. I feel like you can still almost call him underrated at that time, because he was just not getting. I mean, obviously, it was Argentina. Okay, there are many other players who could get, but I don't think he was getting a shout at that time, or even close to being considered a GOAT in that specific season. I mean, it's the same way like Schneider fell behind Messi and Ronaldo, kind of thing in that season. But I don't think that we have a Schneider. I mean, it's difficult because they're also so different, the players.
They are different, I think.
Because you can't say, okay, there's Barella, but they operate so differently.
No, very, very different. And I get you. I think...
And like Van der Voort with the equivalent, Mkhitaryan. You're going to put a Mkhitaryan as
well. I think this 4-2-3-1, that was very often a 4-5-1.
Yeah, because Kivu would like push up. Was that?
I think...
Or Mike Conn would push up Kivu.
They have the ability, they seem to hold any team to a draw and even get a victory. I think that Inter team, man, with the amount of grit they had, with Mourinho in his fucking prime, I think set pieces, I know we rave about Inter set pieces nowadays, but Schneider with Materazzi in the box and Samuel in the box and Lucio in the box, unfucking stoppable, bro. Diego Milito, particularly that one season, was unplayable. The best at there was a point where he was the best striker in the world, and then you look to his side, who is there? Eto'o.
I think that's the biggest Eto'o thing.
This and team, I'm sorry, this team beats the current Inter.
I think so. Because they have a very, very strong, tough spine. Like these players, Maicon, Lucio, Samuel, Kivu, Cambiaso, Zanetti, they're all tough motherfuckers,
yes,
man.
Bro.
And then you look at
Barella.
You have Schneider.
I feel
Schneider
like,
and Pandev, who also have that.
They also had leaders as well in the team. That's the thing. And then the chemistry. The only thing that I'm trying to consider to see, like when I'm making this argument, is I feel like Serie A is much more competitive this season, or at least these last few seasons, than when we won the triplette. I feel like, okay, who is the... There was Spalletti's Roma, who just, like, unfortunate to play when Inter were this good. But I feel like the competition was so much worse, which made them shine more. Not to say that they weren't a great team, but I think this also... There were too many good players to make the comparison. And even this, if you pull people off the bench, you put in Stankovic.
And bro, can we just remember?
Atalanta got relegated there. You won the treble.
Fucking hell! Just to remember, this is the kind of team that up against Barcelona, one of the greatest Barcelona sides we've ever seen. One of them, a man down in the Nou Camp, and they lost that game 1-0, but they went through. They did exactly what they had to do to get to go through. And I believe Barca had scored at the very, very end through like Piqué or some shit it was.
It was something.
On the turn, if I'm not mistaken. But that team was just capable of just getting results. Not to say that this Inter team isn't a ma.
The run was Chelsea, Barca, Bayern in the final. I can't remember who was in the round of 16 when we came out of the group. So I think it was like some Dynamo.
So like Lyon or some shit.
No,
was it?
I think it was like some Eastern team. But anyway, CSK. Okay.
Probably.
So Matthias, I don't think we can answer your question.
Triplette.
Mourinho.
I think so. I think just once there will be a lot of draws.
We'll simulate it, dude. Then we're going like we'll do some FIFA shit.
Five draws. There will be 3 Tripletta winning side wins, and two current Inter wins. 5-3-2.
That's fair. That's fair. I wouldn't change that much. You?
I think I'd put six draws. Six. 6-3-1.
Yo.
All right.
Nice. Shall we go to the quickfire round?
Shall we?
Rather than quickfire, we said we're going to do something
blind
else.
Blind ranking.
You do the blind ranking. I'll take notes. Because I'll definitely forget who he's putting where.
So we're doing 10 spots.
You're going to rank them. You're going to edit them.
What's the criteria we're going to be doing over here? So we're talking performance or personal favorite?
Don't explain anything. That's down to Grima. Grima chooses. Grima chooses. Right. You say the players. What's the theme?
Banter era Inter.
Yes,
exactly. So let's start off with Lukas Podolski.
I remember when he came on with Shakir and I was really excited. I'm like, we're getting Podolski. He's going to smash them in from the left. Because I know some names that might come up. Let's go with like an eighth.
Eighth. Okay. Jeffrey Kondogbia.
Yo.
Just for the money that we had to spend. Yeah, so the thing is then when he went to who was it, Valencia? Villarreal.
Valencia.
He did really well, isn't
it? Decent. Let's go six.
He had one of the best own goals I've ever seen.
Literally. Kondogbia from half pitch, remember it. It was.
Yeah.
Six.
Okay, six. Let's go for Davide Santon.
I used to like Santon. Like,
did you put them one?
I would too, but the thing is, there's so many of them. It's like, let's put it three. Let's go three.
Yo.
But I used to like Santon. I remember, he had a crazy game. I remember when he got him on against Ronaldo. And I was like,
yes, he had him in his pocket, dude. I saw highlights of that on Instagram recently.
Always chewing gum. Is there like this young guy? Like, we love a really good Chismo. Then I don't know what the fuck happened.
Ray Manai.
Bro, I don't think he ever really played. Maybe he came on like as a cameo or something like that. It's the Albanian dude, no? I don't think he ever really played. Played with Pescara.
He played with Benevento, I think, one season. Yeah.
I don't think he ever really played, so...
Let's change him. Ignore that one, yeah. So let's go for Nagatomo.
Yo.
Put him as one.
Yeah!
Great answer. Nice. Great answer.
Just for the shirt sales back in Tokyo, dude.
Exactly. Just to say, you have in first Nagatomo, in third Santon, in sixth Kondogbia, and in eighth Podolski. I can just show you my phone to be honest.
Okay.
Cool.
Let's go for João Mário.
I was really, really hopeful for this guy. Like, I used to like him. I remember just being like, he played so well with Portugal. Now we're signing players. Like, now, Torreira, this is Torreira. We're like, now we spent 40 million. Fucking turtle, dude. The highlight of his career was knocking out Juve, I think, or scoring against Juve.
Exactly. Of his Inter career. Actually, he did really well after.
No, with Sporting. His highlight
literally.
Or Porto. I forgot who was playing. But last season.
It was, I believe it was Sporting, don't quote me though.
Let's go five.
João Mário. Yeah. Five.
Let's go for Vidic.
Nine.
Yo, there is nine.
Terminator at United.
He was Ditcher. No, he was horrible. I generally think it was horrible. Again, these are all players that, like, not all of them, but Vidic was another one. That's when I said, like, this is who we need. You know, because he has the experience, he's gonna come in Serie A, it's gonna be a fine because it's a bit slower, so his profile was gonna do well. And then it was just like, he still managed to get sent off, and like, I don't know, but not in
good way. You said, is there a nine? There's a nine at this table, and his name is Lou Grima.
Yes,
nice.
You're welcome,
Danilo D'Ambrosio.
Highest anyone's ever. D'Ambrosio, who do I have? I have two.
You have two? Yo, oh, good.
No,
good.
I actually like D'Ambrosio.
I had him on Fanta once and he couldn't stop scoring, bro.
No, but that's the thing, that he just remained so loyal. He was such a serviceable guy. Like, and I think for the wage that he used to take, the faculty could play in so many
positions. He used to play at a point right wing, back right back, and centre back.
Like they just put, you can just put him on, and
con he was numero 33.
And he was like, he had the grinta, he had the experience, like he would just do well. Mm-hmm. I really liked him. I thought he was nice, like, perfect to have.
So you have in first Nagatomo, second D'Ambrosio, third Santon, fourth is vacant, fifth João Mario, sixth Kondogbia, seventh is vacant, eighth Podolski, ninth Vidic, and you still haven't given us your number 10 yet. The worst
I
one.
I think it's about to come now. Gabigol.
Say his full name just for
Gabriel Barbosa.
The thing is, in my head, I want to put Jonathan. But Gabigol is a fucking 10. Like, I think I have to put him as a 10.
No, Lou Grima's a 10.
Just rate him a 9.
Is that?
I had a drink. I had one shot.
He. But does that change for everyone? Like, if you call someone a 6 after one shot, they're a 10.
Yes.
Yes. It's just anyone.
Yeah. Most people become more like, what do you think of their drinks?
Like, a 10.
Not from a 6 to a 10, but what after one drink, 7, after another drink, 8, then you have to have a few more, and then goes 9, 10.
But the original, how we understood it, was funny.
Yeah. Just if you start drinking,
everyone's a 10. Like, you're sick, boom, 10.
That must be amazing. Like, you just live your life, you just, like, every so often, you become, like, a little bit of an alcoholic. Like, everyone's fucking caught.
Exactly.
Like, everyone's super, you look at
or
them.
Or extremely
like,
frustrating. It must suck, to be honest.
Uh-huh. If everyone is hot, is anyone as well, hot. Like, that's true.
That's... so deep, not so deep. Tommaso Rocchi.
What do I have?
Tommaso Rocchi.
I really liked him at Lazio. Yes, I really liked him at Lazio. I put him as a 4 just because I respect what he used to do.
3 goals he scored for you.
No, yeah, I just respect what he had done at Lazio. I put him as a 4.
Mm-hmm.
No, he wasn't. He just came in as like this rotation.
So who is at number 7, Jake, for Grima?
Kuzmanovic.
he
came from the Turkish league, Kuzmanovic, if I'm not mistaken.
He's Serbian, but I can't remember what league he came from.
I think he was in the Turkish league, if I'm not mistaken.
I can't remember.
It's a FIFA thing in my.
He was just so horrible. There was him. There was Ricky Alvarez at the time.
I have a whole list.
Kuzmanovic was Basel, horrible. And then Fiorentina, Stuttgart.
But at least Tider was cheaper. I mean, Bundesliga was shit. Yeah, and Villa was another one who came in, and I had high hopes for him. It was like,
nothing hit Tay back then. Like
Medel,
Gary Medel.
He had a good run at Bologna.
Balls,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He gave you an element.
I think it did quite well.
And he's like continued playing with Chile.
Uh-huh.
No, there are some players.
He was a makeshift centre back at the point as well, playing the ball from the back.
Bro, Gary Medel, didn't he go to Bologna and
did his
bits over there?
Really
then they were playing him centre back. This was Mihailovic era.
Mihailovic, what is that?
No, they brought the thing out. I think that's the thing. There was like a Jan in Villa who was like this hyped up player, you know, was doing well with Stad René. Nothing.
Yeah.
But Mundegaard is like, sorry. You're making me angry. This player is making me angry.
Okay, this is a question from Santi now.
Okay.
Because I didn't brief you on this one.
Okay.
So this is to close things off. This is the last question.
If you were 2 inches into DeMarco and Dumfries was 2 inches in you, would you move forward or back?
If I was 2 inches into DeMarco, bro,
and Dumfries was 2 inches in you.
You move forward.
I think so. You break your back.
Yeah.
A bit of an easy question, Santi.
But that's fine. Like, yeah,
it's true.
If it was the other way around, I'd do the same thing. I'd slip into Dumfries. For sure.
In general, you'd rather slip in, no? Than
yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Uh-huh. I think usually
it's there's the whole question about your father, your mom, and your dad. But to be honest, if you move
we won't
back
go into that.
And your
no,
and
no,
your
that's
dad,
for another episode.
Oh wait, let me answer. But if you go back and your dad goes inside you, at least you can write like a mixtape. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Like, my dad used to fucking, you know, and you can become a rapper.
We've been your hosts. So there's one more.
You'd rather have been fucked by your father than be a motherfucker.
Yes, that's it.
There is one more, because he asked on the group chat today. I know you're all bursting right now, all of you, myself included. However, Cam wants to know if you have any favorite football books.
I was thinking. I really haven't read too many. I have them like in the thing. I have Zlatan's. I have Pirlo's.
You have Adrenaline of Zlatan. It's really good.
I am Zlatan.
The first one. I haven't read them yet.
I got them. They're my brothers, but I haven't. I couldn't stop
reading Adrenaline once I started because the Milan references are
goal.
Crazy.
Goal is the only.
Goal is good. One and two. Yeah. The three can go fuck itself, man. And how the movie and the book were completely different. And one is playing for Mexico, but he's not playing at all because he did his ACL. Yeah. And the other one, he's scoring a winner in the World Cup final for Spain. It was crazy, man.
Santiago Muñez.
The first with Gavin Harris. The first book I ever read was Roy Keane's autobiography, and I really fucking enjoyed it. And the second book I ever read was Stuart Pearce's. Our dad loves the Premier League, so he just used to give me these books to read. Those I really, really enjoyed.
Pirlo's book is very good.
Stuart Pearce read was Liverpool, they used Nottingham. To call
him the Psycho. He was Spurs for the majority of his career, if I'm not mistaken. He's known similarly to Baggio. He missed a penalty in the World Cup, if I'm not mistaken, and it essentially ruined his career. Used to listen to heavy metal on his way to games. Really cool.
Sick.
Need to say, I barely remember reading it because I was like, 9 years old when I read it. Any more books or...
I don't know, but... Definitely, I need to read up more.
I don't often read about football, to be honest with you.
Just talk about it.
The thing is, as I again, like the ones that interest me are more the autobiographies. Ancelotti have one. Ancelotti, that he writes something.
It doesn't.
Or give some memoirs or something like that.
True. I say, just a general rule is if you read a biography of a player who used to play for your team, you're going to enjoy it. Because you're going to learn a lot of new things. You're going to be nostalgic. It's kind of like I was listening to Kevin Prince Boateng's podcast.
It was excellent.
It's so fun listening to stories behind the scenes of Milan that were happening like at the time. Like how he was technically worse than the players around him. And so he just got fitter than everyone.
Exactly.
I've seen clips of him on other podcasts.
He was on ours.
No, clips of him. Invited. Another is it his or it's his?
No, he was on Rio Ferdinand.
He was on Rio Ferdinand. Yeah, because he was saying something like when he was with Barca.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. He went from Sassuolo to Barcelona.
He was speaking about how he went from the UK to Milan.
Portsmouth to Milan, exactly. Yeah.
He was going to join Genoa. He was pretty much there, and he kept going to Milan because on his locker they were taking down David Beckham's name. And he's like, oh my God, there's like big shoes to fill. That's a great watch. I also want to watch, Brian Clough has some series out.
I saw this.
I saw clips on TikTok and it looks, firstly, the actor is Brian Clough. Like he plays the part so well from what it seems.
He was with Derby, right?
Uh-huh, when or he took Leeds. Over Derby. Not Leeds.
Leeds, when he was with Leeds. The something 40, the 40.
Uh-huh, because it was thing. Their most... famous with their most successful period, and then they got him.
It was like 40 days of whatever. So, and he got like some players from where was it before Brighton?
He got some Irish players.
Sure.
This is why I want to watch it.
Yeah.
So
the dirty, I can't even remember.
Kevin Prince Boateng actually did transfer to Genoa, played no games for them, was loaned out immediately to Milan. So I assume he forced his way out. It's not a book, however, I also recommend the Spurs documentary when Mourinho was there. That is excellent. Yes. It's
so good.
Pure television. So
good. Behind the Amazon thing.
Mm-hmm. What's it called? Dele Alli.
The same one that City have, no? Or Juve have?
Yeah.
Juve
yes. All or nothing.
All or nothing.
Spurs, there's City, there's Arsenal with Arteta with the whole light bulb thing. Anyway, he's trying to teach his teammates about teamwork and connection, and they all like get a battery and there's a light bulb in the middle and it's the light, it goes on, and
his approach is hilarious. I love you. You are the best.
Anyway, shall we end it there?
Yes, thank you very much, guys.
Amazing.
Thank you, Grima. You were amazing. You enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it very much. Like, honestly, it's very fun.
It's funny.
Fun.
Talk about football.
Like, exactly. Great, like, it's like what I would do. Just with the microphone.
This is the only reason we managed to keep this up for 4 years.
We're going to have fun editing your audio.
Sorry.
It's fine.
I can see it from here. Even when I'm speaking over here, it's quite high.
It's true, it's good. It's good. I'm only kidding.
The worst is if you're going to just hear me going like... like Matt's going to be speaking. What do you think, Reeb? I'm just going to hear him in the background going...
like the guy from Hey Arnold. Anyway.
What a crazy...
breathing in Helga's ear all the time.
Like, I would get decked every time.
Yeah, exactly. You remember Harold? I'm gonna pound you! Anyway, thank you very much, guys. We'll catch you next week for the return of Serie A. Love you all. Forza Malta, because we actually did decently. Yeah.
Become patrons.
Yes, sir.
It's great, so you can interact with this handsome gentleman.
And you can get him a better microphone.
Yes, it actually held up though. But yeah. Thank you, guys.
If you like Serie A or have ever liked it in the past, it's a good opportunity for you to listen once a week and you'll get filled in.
In the football weekend, that's like the main dish. But then a few days later, you drop your episode and that's like the dessert. And the dessert is just perfect.
It's good, the cake.
It makes it feel like we're all sitting in a room together, just BSing with each other.
The atmosphere is fantastic.
I promise nobody will ask you to send boob pics.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
I love how you go into so much detail and show so much passion towards each and every team. Literally, no team is left undiscussed.
When I listen to you, it's like I'm talking to you in a pub. It's like I'm chatting to a friend and you're chatting to me.